Welcome back, everyone, to ArcticCast number 185. The last episode we had was with a geologist. That is GEO, geologist, rocks and stuff. I haven't filmed it yet. We'll be filming it in a couple of days' time. She is the Scottish geologist on Instagram. I think she has the best part of 300,000 followers. I'm really liking the All In series for the food and farming's great because I meet loads of folk about food and farming and it makes it look like I know things about, well, the subject I teach when I don't, and it's really handy. But with the All In series, I'm seeing people that I've never heard of their jobs before. I've heard of geology, by the way, but it's fantastic. So I open up that sort of side of things and just learn more about a thing I knew nothing about. If you want to hear more things about stuff I know nothing about, because that seems to be the route this podcast has started on, go back to number 178 when I interviewed Bronte Claire Mitchell, who spoke about fashion as I was dressed in a full Tesco get-up. So that might be quite entertaining for you. The next episode we have is a special one. It's a very special one. Not that today is not, but I'll tell you why it's a special one. It is the reason this podcast exists, the next episode, and the reason for that is back in a couple of weeks ago, maybe no, a couple of months ago, sorry, we interviewed Sophie Applin, Sophie Gregory. I can't remember which one's her married name and which one's her maiden name. And the reason for that was she was part of our Nuffield cohort this year, as I've interviewed everyone and as we'll continue on, we're about to interview in a few minutes. And that made Sophie the first person ever to come on to the individual food and farming episode twice. And I thought, well, I've opened the gate. I've done it. Let's start going back. So from now on, I'll be bringing on people that came on the podcast at least 100 episodes ago, which, by the way, sickeningly, 100 episodes now is 12 months. So if it was more than a year ago, they can come on the podcast. And the gentleman for number 186 was, I believe, the fourth episode, maybe even the third episode of the R2Cast, but even further back, he was the first person I ever interviewed in the People in Food and Farming chats that I wrote up, I guess. I phoned people for an hour and I wrote a 1,000-word essay on them. And that is where the podcast was born. So Flavian Obiero was coming back on, an absolute legend of the game. He fights for diversity in farming. He is on Countryfile. He's a successful pig farmer. And him and his partner have just brought life into the world themselves as well. So looking forward to that hugely. And today I'm looking forward to the episode for various reasons. We have kind of similar interests in a lot of things. We're doing completely different Nuffield topics. But today's guest will open up and having just spoke before we hit record, we've maybe come up with a little idea for something down the line. We'll speak about that in a minute. Today's guest is Dan Smith. Dan, would you like to say hello?
Hello, yeah. Good to be here.
Done a podcast before?
Yeah, I've done a few. I've done a few.
Yeah. No, you'll be fine then, you'll be fine.
Obviously none of the quality of this, I'm sure, but
Oh,
don't tell them
dear. I hope whoever it was isn't listening.
that.
Just before we get started with another episode of the R2Cast, I would like to thank our primary sponsors, Howden Rural, formerly known as A-Plan Rural. Howden are heavily involved in the social media scene in the ag space with over 100,000 followers on Instagram. They use this following to host social media takeovers with farmers throughout the country to showcase their stories, as well as posting to their rural community blog with further articles about these people in the sector. On top of this, they like to support initiatives that are championing the British agricultural industry, such as myself. So thank you to Howden Rural for that.
Yeah.
I'll just tell everyone that the plan that we've come up with, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it might. Dan wanted a crack at having a go at interviewing a celebrity. So I'd put my name forward. That's not true. He didn't say that part. We thought it could be fun to sort of switch the roles after this podcast and have an episode where Dan interviews me. Now, if you're absolutely bored and want to listen to me talk for an hour, then that could be a good thing to do. We then also come up with something else that could be very out there, and it might be something down the line we decide not to do, but it could be fun to mention. Dan, as we'll get into, has a is it qualification, Dan, or is it a
Not
background?
really. It's a learnt kind of skill, I guess, probably is that I've done
Okay.
a lot of training that might go towards qualification, but it's a kind of on the job training through difficult scenarios is probably the best way to
Excellent. Well, that makes it
describe
even
it.
more fun. That makes it even more
Yeah.
fun. In therapy, counselling, what would the word be?
Exactly. Yeah. The therapy. My day job is therapeutic intervention for for teenagers. So I think you probably fit that category quite
I'm only
nicely.
8 years above it. I mean, we thought it could be quite cool. Now, please let me know what you think about this. It'd be quite interesting to hear some feedback. It might not happen. It could be something we, as Dan said, we might even film. And then I think we do it in person. We might even film and it will never see the light of day, apart from ourselves. But it could be interesting. So please let me know if I've had my notable mental health troubles probably in the last 2.5 years, which I've alluded to on here and I've spoke about in various podcasts, but never went fully detail. I think there's some detail I probably wouldn't go into if we're going public, but we speak a lot about mental health and we speak about being open. And I think, and I'm willing to accept any criticism on this, that we talk about being open about it and promote it being a good thing, but don't actually often do it on a platform, which there is absolutely no requirement, and I would never ever force anyone into. And I think when I've got this platform, it could be quite interesting because I'm at one with the thing that happened. It's part of me now, and it's a thing that definitely still affects me, but not negatively anymore. I live with it and I understand it now. But maybe we'll find out on camera that I don't. That'd be interesting. It'd be quite cool to record that, talk about that story. And if anyone's out there and they're going through a similar situation or just going through a terrible situation, maybe that could be some kind of, okay, other folk do this and people that I follow do this. And you know, somehow there's about 750,000 of you that have listened to this. Maybe it helps someone. It could be a really cool thing to try. It could be something down the line. Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
I mean, it might be a disaster and a right laugh, so you know, all of those. It could be anything at this stage.
It could be quite interesting to see how it goes. Maybe we even do it in Brazil. You never know.
Yeah.
It could actually, yeah, it could open a world of maybe you and I in a year's time, Dan, will have a podcast.
There
The
you
Dan and Wallace Foundation is something I
go.
mentioned. Yeah, but Dan, we're here to speak about you today, not about me and a potential other episode. But just for those that don't know who you are, could you give them a bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, current background. So I'm a farm manager and a consultant from down in the Wye Valley on the Monmouthshire-Gloucestershire border. And the farm that I manage here is part of a broader charity called Jamie's Farm. I've been here 7 years, and really what we do is we use farming as a kind of therapeutic tool to help teenagers in need or young people in need. Ranging from trying to help young people not to be expelled from school because of behavior things, to mental well-being, to unaccompanied asylum seekers and children in care. And we welcome them to the farm, and they come and stay with us, and they go through a process where they kind of have to agree to a life swap, and they don't bring their phones, and they don't have any of their own food, and they're not allowed to vape and smoke, and they have to be respectful. That's kind of what they're signing up for. And then while they're here, they should feel like they're on a kind of good family farm. So they cook all their own meals with a great chef, and they do gardening. We've got a big vegetable garden. They do lots of farming. They do horse work. They do wood chopping, kind of those tangible skills that give them a sense of purpose, but often a lot of stuff that they haven't done. The other side of it is I'm using the phrase regenerative less. I think environmental farming is my kind of passion and something that I really bought here. But that's so a lot of the work I do in my own time, but also helping others, is also in that world. I'm a bit of a sort of a soil geek and kind of grazing. It's mostly livestock based, but agroforestry and meadow restoration and all of those things. So we're kind of which works with the charity work I'm doing here, because actually it's a theme that's spoken a lot about in schools. So there is a kind of relation, and to kind of show these kids that, yeah, we're doing really good farming, we're not killing the world, you can eat really, really good food that doesn't have a negative impact. I can show them data that we're carbon negative. It's kind of all rolled into one.
How long do they sign up for?
They come for a week.
A week,
They
yeah.
come for a week, and actually it's a very it a week works. They go through the storming, norming, forming stage within the space of a week. Any longer doesn't necessarily have the same effect, and we don't really have returners because to some degree that magic has gone. But we collect a lot of data on them. We can prove that what we do, ha it changes their lives. And you can see that in them within a space of a week as well.
You're speaking about someone who's coming not from a perfect environment for whatever reason. Yeah.
I mean,
And
I would suggest that that's it, it, I would suggest from the demographic of your listeners, that's probably quite an understatement. Yeah, that
yeah, for
they're
sure.
I came from a not perfect environment, I guess, but a relatively stable upbringing, and my eyes have been like blown open by some of the lives that these guys have to operate within, you know. Yeah.
So, c coming from that, I would assume, especially with this generation, and by this generation, by the way, I not because I want to stay young, but because I do include myself, I include myself. Having that phone is a massive confidence to a lot of.
Interesting.
Well, I well,
Do you view it as a confidence to yourself? Is that what
you
that's
could
what
argue it's a
you're
false confidence, but I think. I mean, how often have you seen people in a slightly awkward situation, like,
go
i.e.,
to
someone
their phone?
is waiting in a queue? Oh, well,
Yeah.
I better look at my phone.
Yeah.
You know, check. You
I
don't.
agree with you, but that doesn't necessarily make that a good system for their confidence change or their
I
kind
don't
of.
think it's good, by the way. I'm just.
Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah,
I guess that's like in a
I'm
troubled
slightly
child.
playing with you. Yeah, you're
Yeah.
right to some degree. They believe it's a confidence
That's more what I meant.
thing,
Yeah.
and they believe I would use the term sort of safety blanket.
That's more what I mean.
Now, if you also consider that a lot of these children have never been without phones, I'm old enough to remember when A, I didn't have a phone, and then I had a terrible phone, and I eventually got a smartphone. These guys haven't gone through that. The phones have always been accessible to them.
Sure.
The flip side of that is, and data to prove it, is that in these children's lives, those phones are probably also the most damaging thing in terms of social media, in terms of photographs, in terms of videos, in terms of how they live their lives, including it cancels out a lot of like really healthy social interaction. So actually, if you can get to them to the point where they're prepared to give in their phone, and you know, we've had kids come here with five burner phones before we get to their real phone. That's how much they're kind of thinking about it. But if you can get to that point and you can get their attention, and we say to them very openly, the reason that you're not having your phone is because we want you. We want your kind of full self. And we don't want you worrying about what someone's saying and then you're kind of desperate to get to your phone. Or they can give them their full selves over, and then they don't have their safety blanket. They're ready for opportunity and to learn. In the same way, you know, I'm pretty terrified to go to Brazil, but it's me going out of my comfort zone, and that is one of the things for them. You know, it's getting that they won't check that you could change them, but unless you remove some of those things that they're very used to, and food's a fairly similar thing, but we also know that food has quite an effect on behavior in certain ways. Unless you're prepared to remove some of those barriers, then you won't necessarily see that change.
I would just like to quickly interrupt the show for a minute to give you some extra information about our primary sponsors, Howden Rural, the new name for A Plan Rural. Howden Rural provide bespoke insurance cover for farms and estates. This could be for anything from tractors and machinery to a new exciting diversification venture. Be sure to check out Howden Rural today. What reaction have you seen to the we're taking their phone off you? Because we can't do it in my workplace,
No, and a lot of
and I
schools
wouldn't,
don't.
by the way. I actually, but that's we'll speak of that in a minute. I have different thoughts.
Yeah, a lot of schools don't, and I've questioned them on it, and it's this idea of pick your battles. I hear that quite a lot. Now what we really know is that young people, or anyone actually, and including animals in this, feel comfortable where there are firm boundaries. They feel safest where there are firm boundaries set. Now, the part of the problem is that a lot of these young people come from lives where there are no boundaries,
Yeah.
and a lot of that is the contributing factor to why they display behaviors like they do, right? So actually, even if a child has a problem with giving their phone, that's just the rule. It's not delivered in a kind of punitive way or a it, you know this you've you, they sign a piece of paper before they've come. They've already agreed to it. And I'm not saying they always give it up easily. It depends a lot with the relationship with their staff, and it also depends to some degree depends on the history of those children, because quite often they don't have very much. So to take one thing that means a lot to them is huge for them. But
There's
if
a
you
trust
can
there
be,
as well, isn't there? There's a
say again, sorry.
I guess there's a trust there that's required
Absolutely. And
coming back in 7 days, yeah.
why should they come here and instantly trust us? It's not, that's a nonsense concept. That's an adult concept. But if we can get past that point and be really clear, this is why we're doing it, just give it a go. And if you're really struggling, we'll talk about it. In the same way we ask them not to smoke, but in the same way we say you're not allowed cigarettes, if you're really struggling with that, then communicate with us and we'll try and help you. It's not like a you must give us this. It's almost a two-way thing. And it's the one thing that they really try and avoid, and the one thing that they really think that they can't do. And it so we survey every child at the beginning of the week and the end of the week. And at the end of the week, it is very often the thing that they say that A surprised them, but has been the biggest benefit to them.
That's amazing.
And a lot of them say they will go home and really, really try and not use their phone as much. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's what happens, but the fact that they've thought about it and that's in their mindset now, it to me is a huge win.
Have you seen The Social Dilemma?
You always do this. I've listened to your other podcasts
Asked
where
a
you
few of
quote
them.
these things, and I'm like, I don't even know what that is. And
So.
it's not because I haven't done it. It's just because my memory is terrible.
And also, it's like I have a very strange way of thinking. I understand that probably that never really makes sense, those questions I throw in either. The Social Dilemma is a Netflix documentary that I strongly encourage you to watch.
I have seen it, yeah, which is about how essentially we're trained to perpetuate that behavior.
And
That
the science behind the fact one of the guys on it used to work for Pinterest, one used to work for Gmail, that the science behind creating where the next click is to be addicted to something you didn't know that was addictive, like
And
Gmail.
I'm the same. I scroll through Instagram and I'm like, what on earth have I just done with my time? Or looking at people arguing on Facebook for absolutely no reason gives me great pleasure. But you're right, it's designed to kind of appeal to us. And what's really sad is it's we're not even, or I'm not even, the kind of the market, especially the like TikTok and Snapchat and kids who come here, their streaks on Snapchat, they're really, really upset because they can't maintain their streaks. And I kind of say to them, what are you achieving by that? What are you getting? And they're not getting anything apart from that kind of like, oh, well, I'm keeping up with this and therefore it's good. Does that,
Well, I'll hold my hands up and say embarrassingly get this because I have students that have snap streaks. Like, I mean, I think it was something like April 24th, 2015, and the absolute peak is like 9 years, and I've got some that are 7 years and whatever. These kids are 16, yeah. They're not kids, but you could say they're kids. But I used to take the piss because I saw them like taking a photo of the floor in class. Send the Snapchat for the snap streak, which I'm not really fussed about students
They were
using
trying to look up your kilt, that's what they were doing.
a floor. I bloody hope not. Taking a photo and just literally taking a photo of the floor, literally the floor. Send it to 100 folk, get a streak for the day. And I took the piss. I was like, look, if you guys are actually chatting to folk, fair enough. And like, I've got two Snapchat streaks, and one's a family friend, and one's my partner, right? But I am conscious that when that little egg timer goes, I send a photo of a blank screen. I have done it maybe 10 or 12 times. And what's really interesting on this side of things is you mentioned about scrolling. I'm actually not a scroller. I used to be, probably before TikTok was a thing, even when it was Vine, Facebook as well, scroll, 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 not really even reading what I'm looking at. I'm not at all now. I would go as far as saying I'm genuinely not at all. My screen time is embarrassing. Let's, as I see this point, just quickly look at it. It'll be very high. But scrolling is not what it is. There's a lot of sort of the only time you could say I'm scrolling is when I'm scrolling through Instagram to find folk that would be interesting for the podcast. It's still kind of that side of things. By the way, daily average 10 hours 47. Through the roof, right? But it's genuinely not scrolling. It's a lot of looking at stuff and whatever for the podcast. It's also I also do all the editing. I do all that stuff on the phone. But
Okay.
near this point, and I think you'll find this interesting from the psychological side, is I don't think, even if I had all my podcasts scheduled and uploaded, it's the only thing I really need it for. I would miss it, and I genuinely don't know what I would miss. I
So,
genuinely don't know what part I would.
imagine the you're old enough and big enough to kind of think some of that stuff for yourself.
For sure.
Imagine the relief for some of these people when the clarity is there because they suddenly realize that they don't miss it. You know, you don't have to go through the whole thinking process around that because if you don't have your phone and you've done 2 days and you're like, oh my God, I haven't even missed my phone. Well, the clarity's there. You don't need to know the reasons behind it or the kind of, you know, where a lot of the damage done is it to these children is because of Snapchat and because of TikTok and because of the videos that get sent round of them or their friends or things that are said online or, you know, it's tragic. And you're not even necessarily experiencing that side, but you're still in some way addicted to some of that. So imagine if for a moment that's just removed for you by an external power that happens to be us, but also it's replaced by giving them a massive sense of purpose. They're achieving, they're being told every minute of the day that they're amazing and they're doing great things because they are. They're challenging themselves, they're going on walks every day. So, and all of a sudden they're not missing it. They realize that they can replace some of those things that they find by having a phone, and it's not all negative, but they've replaced that with other things. And that's and if they've never had that before, they're like, oh, okay, this kind of works. You know, you could delete Snapchat tomorrow and you'd be right.
I think I've actually said it wrong. Do you know that? I'm thinking through
Okay.
because there's been periods of time where I've went probably not much longer than 24 hours, but probably 24 hours without using it. But yeah, this is more what it is. See, when you said they
Maybe
go,
I misunderstood. Perhaps I misunderstood you. Yeah.
no, you didn't at all. I said it. I don't think I said the truth. You mentioned something about when these kids leave, they're like, sorry, these teens leave, they're like, I'm going to consider it more about not using my phone. I've been through the period of, 24 hours or a really busy day at work for 10 hours where I haven't looked at my phone. Now, by the very nature of what's on my phone, there's normally quite a lot of notifications when I come back. I know that I've loved that period of time,
Okay.
loved it, because I don't have any requirement to be there because essentially my phone is work now, which work I enjoy, by the way, not a taxing work, but generally it's a job now. I've absolutely loved being away from it, but I get and I can feel the rush of excitement when I get to look through those notifications. And that, by the way, that's embarrassingly sad,
Oh,
but
your
it's the
fans.
truth. I wouldn't even go. No, not at all. I wouldn't even go. I wouldn't even say I have that. But just even
Yeah,
like,
but that's okay. That's okay because that's, you know,
no
that's
big deal.
life. But I think for you, that's a really positive outcome from having a phone.
For sure,
Whereas the translation of that is it's not always so. Even if we think it is, it's not always so. And they're very much a part of our lives. You know, we have them in our pockets all the time, and they help us in many, many ways. But the negative side of that we see a lot, and that's the bit that I think as adults we have to be very conscious of, you know. And as parents, my kids aren't anywhere near that age yet, but as parents, it's a real struggle to kind of manage that, you know. That's tough.
I literally just stopped filming with Ollie Chedji, and he'd said his kids don't watch telly for the week. And I was like, that's amazing. I would have, I not at all saying my parents didn't do it right, by the way, but I was addicted to telly, definitely. SpongeBob SquarePants, loved it.
Well, I have a 4-year-old, and she believes the only thing that actually comes on telly is rugby. She's not aware that
Oh,
there's a
you've played
program called
that
Six Nations is her chance.
well. TV's
Yeah,
kind of
but you
dead,
know
though.
that. And actually, again, there's loads of positives with TV. Kids learn loads of stuff from TV, but there is other plenty of other things out there, and that's kind of what we're offering. We're just offering an alternative view on stuff. We never say this is how you have to be, but we're giving them a challenge enough that we can pick things out of it. So when we send them home, and every Friday we do a kind of celebration meeting, I will tell them how great they are, because these kids are great, which is partly why I'm doing my Nuffield, and they're like so overlooked all the time. And I've met like thousands of thoroughly decent children who will make thoroughly decent adults, but would generally never be given the time of day. And that pisses me off, right? That's the kind of, but
It's
we're only getting to that because we're removing some of those barriers, like phones.
how, by the way, don't think at all I disagree with the phone thing. I completely agree with it. I find that sort of social, is it social psychology? I don't know what the exact term is, but that I had a massive discussion about it with a colleague about phones that, I'm pretty sure we're not allowed to take phones off. I've never done it. I do it for a bit of a laugh when the confidence students have been silly and I'll put it in my pocket for 5 minutes. But I mean, I never take them off them fully. I just wouldn't do it. But I find it very interesting, and I think there'll be a huge amount of positive from that. How do the people that come to you, how do you get in touch with them, and how are they, or whatever the term might be?
They generally come through schools, so they're selected with the schools, and we help them with the selection process. Where it's really successful is where we have a lot of repeat schools, so they bring groups to us time and time again, because we can sort of, it changes the culture within the school to some degree, or at academy chains. And we work with councils, and with virtual schools and all those sorts of things. But yeah, we kind of we do a bit of kind of marketing, I suppose, in the loosest sense of the term, but generally it's people coming to us.
And is it a thing that involves the parents, if they are guardians, whatever, or is it purely?
No, we've done a few groups with parents. It's very it, that that's tricky almost, because a lot of those ingrained behaviors are more ingrained. We have a lot of parents. We had one guy drive all the way down from Leeds once, just brought his son down from Leeds, had a group from school from Leeds, and then he drove his son down 2 weeks later just to thank us. So 4.5 hour drive he drove down just to thank us.
That's
So sometimes you get the parents. We ring the parents every week and sort of give them an update, mostly because when they get home, we want the parents to recognize that they've done well and be like, "Oh my God, I've heard you've done so well," because that's a confidence boost in itself. But equally, a lot of them don't have parents, sadly. So that's a hard,
well, a
but
guardian can mean as much as a parent.
absolutely. But actually, to some degree, what we're doing is developing relationships between the young people and the adults that they come with, i.e., their teachers or the people in the care home or whatever it happens to be, so that they have another trusted adult that they can go to in school, or they can go that then that trusted adult has generally gone through the same process that, we ask them not to use their phones, and we get them really stuck in with doing stuff like, I don't know, crutch and use that they really don't want to do, but they do it alongside the kids, and that's part of the power of it as well.
So, I mean, the one thing that sprung to mind for me was chopping wood, because I could do that forever. I love it. Most therapeutic job on the planet. Honestly, if you took me away from job and I knew I was going to be fed for the rest of my life and I could just at my leisure cut logs without having to do the moving the logs to the bit you chop it, it's amazing. Honestly, it really is.
But also can also considering that none of the adults around you would even consider you trustworthy with a tool, let alone an axe. So you're instantly giving them a kind of, here you go, we trust you. We've given you the kind of boundaries of what we wanted to do. We're giving you a very sharp object that could be really dangerous when no one else will. And we're giving you this chance in a very, you don't have to say it, it's very visual. And then they get out a lot of that kind of physical work, and we set them up to succeed. So it doesn't matter whether you're a big Scots lad who can chop logs, or a small girl from
Yeah, you're yeah, of
you
course.
know.
You're not
So,
getting yeah, for sure.
so we try and make everything sort of equitable for all, so that they're achieving together, if that makes sense.
Do you spend more time managing people than a farm?
Good question. It's a difficult juggle, and it depends on the week. What I'm very proud of is the fact that there's always farm management behind the scenes, i.e. paperwork and all that sort of stuff. But the actual day to day, the children, the young people do do everything with me, you know, from milking the cow to mucking out the pigs to sorting ewes out to moving them with the dog to putting them in a trailer to driving them here
Sure.
to they literally do from lambing. They love lambing, you know, pulling out lambs. And as long as I see it as kind of safe and with the animal's welfare at the kind of at the heart of it, then they can do everything, you know. And so they're very much integrated into everything that I do.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Is how long has it been happening? When did it
So
start?
Jamie's Bum is has been going 12, 13 years now, and I've been on this site for 7 years.
Right. Yeah.
My history before that, as you kind of, so I had my own estate maintenance business essentially. I was a kind of a naughty, I was say a naughty boy. I'd been labelled a naughty boy. I wasn't a naughty boy. I just didn't want to be in school. Kind
Sure.
of left school with GCSEs but nothing else. Hated school. No desire to do any of that nonsense. Set up my own business. Well, I went through a time of doing whatever I wanted for a while, but then after that, I set up my own business and was quite successful. Did it? We'd done all right. Yeah, and then came here, and that's 7 years.
Is
Yeah, so
it?
no training with kids or anything like that is what I'm
Yeah.
trying to say. Apart from the University of Life, I guess.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Is it one of those jobs that's tough but rewarding, or is it all rewarding?
Oh no, it's tough. It's
Yeah.
tough. The tough being, and it's actually really you mentioned earlier about mental health. Probably at the end of last summer, we'd been understaffed to some degree, and we'd had a quite a tough run of it. And for the first time ever, I started talking to people about this kind of concept of burnout, which,
Yep.
as a kind of proud hard worker who had historically been doing 110-hour weeks and not really minding, and had that, you know, there's this. Maybe it's not ridiculous. I was about to call it ridiculous, but there's this thing in the kind of agricultural industry of the more hours you do, therefore you see you're kind of achieving more, which now I understand in my eyes to be a bit daft. But what I hadn't taken into account for quite a few years, I think, doing this job is actually the emotional burden of a lot of this stuff that I was taking on. And it's not just me, because there are others, and I do have supervision from a brilliant person who provides us with supervision to kind of help us with these things. But yeah, it's tough when you're I wouldn't share them on a podcast, but some of the guys that I've met, and some of the stuff that they've been through and talked to us about, not even that phrase of you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy. You can't even imagine it happening, you know. And yeah, that takes its toll. And sometimes I wonder whether things like the Nuffield and stuff, to a degree at the time, was probably a bit of an escape from that to some degree. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you said ridiculous. I think the term is ridiculous for the working hours thing. I don't get it. Well, I get the reason for it, but I think it leads to a lot of accidents.
Yeah, possibly. And actually, I'd written, if we come back to Nuffield again, sadly, but I'd written a whole another kind of application that I never sent around a concept of optimum production. So basically, how can a farm be profitable but also be like a healthy, risk-free environment where people can thrive? And I really, there's another side of me where the environment affects your mental health, and there's another side of me that's like really passionate about that. And actually, for farmers, how do we manage that? And if I'm being really honest, part of my frustration with the changing subsidies and stuff that's happening in the farming world is I don't think that any of that's taken into account. And actually, I think it's only going to compound the problem, because I think what's happening, and the more and more people I speak to, they almost look at farming as a hobby to some degree, which is crazy, because it should never be that. But they're essentially looking at the new subsidy schemes like they're going to break even on the farm, let's say rental costs or whatever it happens to be, but I have to work another job. And that's hopeless, right? Because that's just, there are expectations there that you shouldn't have to manage by being decent farmers who and there are loads of decent farmers who are in that situation.
I think people have a different idea of the word optimizing and maximizing. Because to me, optimizing, like you say there, is not doing 110 hours. It's the amount of people doing 38 hours and still doing fine, whatever that period is. Whereas
Exactly, and that's
yeah.
that balance of what is optimum for that, for the individual farm, the individual farmer, the family of the farmer, the land that they're managing, the livestock that they're managing, and it's complicated, but I think there probably needs to be a bit of work on that to change that mindset of what is optimum, essentially.
At the pub or with mates or with people I know, not strictly mates, I would say I often get, and it's a strange term to say here, but I often get the piss taken out of me because I earn the same amount of money doing less hours. And I don't really care about it, it's a bit of crack fare. But when you actually think about it, I'm like, how am I the one getting that at the minute? Like, I would never, I don't get that. And it's a mentality that I don't want to say
It's a
the word.
mentality thing, but you also have to think about, I guess you have to think about some of the reasons behind why you're getting that in those moments, and I suspect some of it is because a lot of those people don't really understand why they're working all those hours and not getting substantially more money than you.
Yeah, well, you're challenging the wrong part if that's the case, though. No?
Absolutely. But it comes from a place generally in those people where I'm not saying jealousy because they're your mates, but that kind of thing of, they know that working. I'm not having them that a lot of those people that are kind of stuck in those systems wouldn't rather be at home with their families. I just don't believe it.
I
But
think,
the
yeah, I think.
mindset is that we shouldn't mind,
For sure. Agreed. Yeah, I completely agree.
And I'm just not really with that. Mostly, my mindset has actually changed on that a lot since having kids.
Oh, really? Does that just change the way you look at everything? I always ask people this.
Yeah, absolutely, a 1,000,000%. Because it's terrifying, and all you're trying to do is the best for them. And I think probably in my case, it's very much compounded by the other side of the work that I do,
Yeah.
because I'm really trying to sort of protect them against a lot of the stuff that I now know to be true.
Do you
Yeah.
have a, what's the word? So we spoke about upbringings earlier. I had a very good upbringing. I'm aware of that. It wasn't a rich upbringing, but it was a good upbringing. Yeah. And there's part of me that feels, I almost feel bad. I don't think feel bad's the term, but I almost feel bad for it sometimes. And I don't think feel bad is the term, but I think you probably understand what I'm hearing.
I know what you're saying. I know
Yeah.
what you're saying. What I would say to that is, whatever happens to any of us is only relative to ourselves.
For sure.
So you had no power of persuasion over what happened in your upbringing to some degree, in the same way a lot of the kids I deal with do. And it would be really unfair of me to suggest that one child's experience of something really bad is worse than another child's experience of something really bad. So
That's interesting.
everything is everything. In the same way, people would look at me and say that I had a, I was fine. I had two parents that loved me, a couple of brothers, moved around a lot. Parents got divorced, lived on my own from 16, pretty much. It wasn't easy, but it wasn't like hard in comparison to others, but in my, it was relative to me, and a lot of the stuff I really struggled with, I didn't, as a teenager, you don't have that responsibility
For
of it
sure.
being anything but yours. My wife, on the other hand, people would look at, she went to a really, really good school, went to university, parents are still together, are relatively affluent. People would look at that and be like, she had an amazing upbringing. Well, she did, but there are elements of that blow my mind when we really get into the kind of the nitty-gritty of it, in terms of kind of, in lots of reasons, but it's completely relative to her. She didn't live what I lived, and I didn't live what she lived, and you lived what you lived, and I don't think that there is much value in kind of comparing that experience to others.
That's interesting.
I'm not saying that's right, that's just what
Oh, that's really interesting because jumping back to the episode I filmed an hour ago, Ollie Chedji, who did you watch his presentation, Dan? No.
Yeah,
Yeah.
great, yeah.
Very much so. What a system. Anyway, he said about the fact that he'd learned from Michael Blanch and then subsequently many philosophers and various folks from the past, that age of 3 to 7 is, I wouldn't go as far as saying what defines you, but a massive, massive influence on you as that adult. And it's
Yeah, absolutely.
it do, it does kind of predispose you to a different future, even if your support post childhood is perfect.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even, I mean, even younger from zero, you know, that a lot of that damage is done incredibly early. You know, early years trauma will come out in all sorts of in all sorts of ways. You know.
Do you have people that are trained in the psychology side?
Yeah, we're very so the kind of person that heads the lady who heads up the Tish is unbelievable. She's one of those people you just listen to and you're like, oh, you've just made something really complicated completely clear. And she has a way of talking to young people especially that makes them really understand themselves. But yeah, each farm has therapists on them, and a lot of my colleagues have worked in schools or and we do, you know, we do a lot of work around kind of the intervention that we're providing and how we should be and conversations. And yeah, because I've been here a long time, I've done a lot of that. And you know, we have a day's training on the difference between sympathy and empathy, for example, which sounds daft, but there's this kind of that's the depth that we go to into some of these subjects.
Can I uneducatedly have a crack at the whip of what the difference is?
It gone in.
Right, so my understanding is, first off, that sympathy is the ability to care and feel sorry for and maybe help someone who's went through X situation, whereas empathy is the same, but I've been through it, right? No, I thought that part was a given that I'd started correctly.
Not that you've necessarily been through it, but you're trying to put yourself in their shoes and see it how they see it.
I thought that part was sympathy. I thought empathy was when I had been through it.
No, so sympathy is kind of being
Constantly got that wrong.
like oh, that must be do you know what's really interesting about this? You used empathy earlier, and I nearly said, oh, I think empathy gets used a lot, but I don't think people are very good at it.
Okay.
Empathy is a thing for me anyway, where even if you don't understand it, you're prepared to look at it from their point of view. Whereas sympathy
I
is
use it.
very much a thing that we do when we're like, oh, that must be really tough. Which is neither here nor there to some degree. Whereas empathy is trying to see it from their really, really see it from their kind of their take on it.
I
I'll tell you what
completely
I'll do. I'll
understood
tell
what
you what I'll
you
do.
said.
It sounds up. There's a really good YouTube video on it, which I've played to people that really kind of sum up the kind of wording around the differences and even sort of phrases that you should use or could use to kind of highlight the differences.
So when you said earlier, did I show empathy or did I say it wrongly?
No, you implied that you were being empathetic to your students, and I'm not saying that you're not. It just came to me in that moment that I think a lot of not yeah, I think a lot of people use empathy as a word and profess to be empathetic. I'm not saying that that's necessarily what you
For
were
sure.
doing, but empathy is a really tough, it's a tough gig because we have a load of unconscious bias, we have all of these things going on, and actually to be truly empathetic is it is tough. And I think it gets you, we were talking about mental health and how kind of the growth in the kind of wording around that and sort of, and I think being empathetic or showing empathy has grown with that, and I'm just not entirely sure that it's something that happens.
That's interesting, because it my if I was to say I was empathizing with someone, I would the situation that I would say that in, because that's what I thought it was until about 3 minutes ago, is someone's going through something. I've been through something similar. Now,
Yeah,
obviously,
which it can it can be. Of course, it can be that, because then you have a shared experience, and you and that would be it would make it easier for you to be empath it would make it easier for you to empathize, but you whatever experience you went through wasn't exactly identical to that person, even if you went something similar, it just helps you empathize. Does that make sense? If
Does
two
that?
people have if two people have had a car crash, for example, and one person hasn't, the person that that's that the two people have, in theory, in simple terms, it would be easier for them to empathize with each other because they understand more of the intricacies of it.
But one person might have had whatever experience up to that car crash, and the other had like confidently got that wrong.
Well,
That's
not necessarily. No,
not
not
wrong for
necessarily.
sure. Not
Not
wrong,
necessarily. I'm being empathetic to how you, yeah, let's say you didn't get it wrong.
but
Yeah, but it's hard, you know, that is it's a really tough thing. And you know, if we're talking about farming, that's a really, really hard thing, because you're right, a lot of people have the same experiences, but deal with them in very, very different ways.
for sure.
And there is this like there's this kind of competitive element to agriculture that puts some of those barriers up, you know.
We should probably speak about the farm. I probably not going to speak about it forever, but it's I could speak about that stuff for ages. It's really interesting. The thing that's been going through my head for some time is I kind of want to try the week. Now, maybe like you say, my maybe it wouldn't be as different a life,
I
but
think adults have
interesting.
adults have sort of more compounded in ingrained behaviors, and I think also the reason that I really enjoy working with young people, partly because I'll forgive them of anything because they're only kids, whereas often with adults I'm like, what the bloody hell are you doing? Come on,
For
grow
sure.
up. Which is not remotely empathetic, but it's just how I am. They're ready for that change, which is partly my Nuffield topic. I think we need to be getting into these kids earlier because they're looking for more. They're kind of looking for opportunity much more than we do, or they're kind of, you know, they're prepared to challenge themselves often a bit more or push themselves a bit more. And that's kind of why it works. You know, we could try it with adults, but my suspicion is they're not as available to try new things. And actually, if I'm being really honest, that's why I love stuff like the Nuffield and the meeting people. I've done the Oxford Farming Conference Inspire thing. I've done the Challenge of Rural Leadership, and the thing in common and the thing that's really relatable to me is that generally all the people involved in that are like developers and learners and are prepared to challenge themselves, and yeah, they're the kind of people I like. And I have to push myself out of my comfort zone to do that. And actually, very recently, partly because of the university thing that I'm doing through Nuffield, is that I bloody love helping other people, and I'd go to the end of the earth to help other people, but I am terrible at helping, like getting help for myself. And actually, I wonder whether these sort of things like the Nuffield and that are providing some of that without me having to think about it too much.
Probably right, actually. I think I somewhat come under that category myself. It's well, tell us about your Nuffield, Dan. What's the title?
Yeah,
I
so I mean, we've
touched on
touched.
quickly just
Go
before
on.
one to Nuffield itself. I love to ask folk why Nuffield?
Yeah, probably for that reason. The main reason, actually, is I came to a conclusion about 18 months, 2 years ago, that I'd spent a long, long time telling all these visitors we had to the farm that they can do amazing things, they've proved that they're great, and if they just carry on being them, they can achieve anything that they want to achieve. That's kind of quite a standard line for me as they leave, amongst other kind of things. And we quite often say, why don't you look at college? Why don't... And actually, what I really realized is that I felt like I was being a bit hypocritical. I kind of, I didn't have an education. I kind of bluffed my way through a lot of stuff. And yeah, I've done all right. But actually, education even wasn't the important thing. Hadn't ever really learned about anything or ever really pushed myself majorly out of my comfort zone. And I felt that that was like so hypocritical to be. I really like these young people. I really respect them. And I felt like by me being prepared not to, by me not doing it myself, I was almost kind of making me less respected to them, perhaps. It just felt uncomfortable to me that I wasn't doing what I was asking of them, essentially for myself.
Does education from a, like, I don't mean education as in learning. I mean education as in going and getting a degree or something to that ilk
Yeah.
matter?
Really good question.
And that's coming from someone who has created a career off of education.
Yeah, really good question. And I'm not 100% where I sit on that. Quite interestingly, I think it's fair to say my in-laws, I would never have been their kind of number one son-in-law on
Okay.
paper. Maybe I've proved them wrong, maybe I haven't. I'm more relaxed about that. This more relaxed than I've been about that. There's an element, I think, of probably point proving there to some degree, which my wife thinks is like so much nonsense that it's
Okay.
laughable. But there is also that my mum actually said it the other, was it my mum or dad? They said, oh, it was my dad on Monday. He said, you are the least likely person in our entire family who I've thought would be at university doing the postgrad. You know,
Okay.
he was a lecturer at Agricultural College, so he knows the kind of system. And I wonder whether that's buried in there somewhere, actually. But more than that, that the university and the education thing was because when we were at the Nuffield thing, they were kind of like, well, why wouldn't you do it? And there was a lot of people who were like, well, actually, we wouldn't do it because we've got a master's like yourself or whatever it happens to be. When I'm sat in a room thinking, well, I'm surrounded by all these people who've got all this stuff and I've got nothing, so why wouldn't I do it? You know what? What it's really proved, it's been really interesting for me, because it's highlighted all of the reasons why I hated school. And
Are
I'm in a
you just not
complete
enjoying it so far?
No, it's not that I'm not enjoying it because I'm in a completely different place to what I was.
Okay.
But that thing of what I said about asking for help, and I bet you'd see it in some of your students. I bet some of them are really, really good at asking for help, but they're not necessarily any more capable than the guys who don't. And actually, if some of those who don't ask for help did, they'd probably be a lot better. And I know that, but I just like Yeah, I'll ask like close friends, and I don't know whether it's an embarrassment thing. I don't honestly don't know what it is, but I went through my entire school life never asking for help from anyone. And actually, in a lot of other scenarios, I never asked for help. I never ask for help from anyone. And even I have friends who really have to say to me, like, I'm offering to help you now, and that's because I want to. So take me up on it. You know, it
Sure.
has to be that explicit. And actually, now I know. I think that's why I hated school, because I probably did need lots of help in lots of scenarios. And it wasn't because I was thick, it was just because I didn't understand. And there's elements of I'm sat there like typing away a research proposal, and I'm like, what on earth is going on? And what does this word even mean? But I've got the luxury of Google and a clever wife that makes that easier. But it really makes me feel like, oh, how thick are you?
Along with maybe one or two others, I think you're the only one in the WhatsApp group that's never asked a question.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah.
A
Yeah, I'm very quick to put like stupid comments on because that's my kind of like because I want to be involved. But you're probably right. I
want to
wouldn't.
be involved.
Yeah, but
Like,
yeah, you're probably right. I wouldn't. I'd kind of try and find the solution myself, and I really understand that that's not like the useful way to be, I guess, or even the best way to be for me.
credit to you, man. I should be doing that PG cert, and I started the application and I have not continued. I should, to be honest. But like you
Yeah,
say,
I'm really enjoying it, and I did, they're very supportive there, and I did email saying, I really want to do this well, but I'm completely out of my depth and I don't really understand this. And they kind of, the reply is, just keep trying. I'm sure it'll be all right. You're on this
for sure.
because somebody sees something in you or whatever it happens to be. But it's yeah, it's a funny, it's my first time back in education for over 20 years. And I'm still like, well, what on earth's going on? But hopefully I'll come out the end of it and be like, I've achieved something, perhaps. I don't, yeah. Funny.
Tell us about your plans for Nuffield.
Yeah, so I think we were saying when we'll be in Brazil probably when this comes out. So
You should be, man. Yeah, I think so. I think
my main plan is to currently for listeners is to currently be sat around a pool. But I don't, looking at the schedule for it, I just don't think that's
I don't care. I'm
going
doing it at night, man. I don't care. I've
to
set in a
happen.
pool. I am not going to Brazil and not set in a pool.
I mean, I'm so excited. I weirdly, I think a lot, not weirdly, a lot of people apply for Nuffield because of the kind of adventure element. And I almost don't think I did. I think I applied for it because I really believe in my subject matter and saw a way of kind of learning around that, which by the way is my title, Generation Regeneration. So I'm looking at whether policy change and sort of farming method changes, which are currently happening, whether that can really encourage the kind of next generation to get on board and join the industry. That's kind of where I'm at, because that kind of brings in both of my passions. And then it suddenly occurred to me, I'm like, I get to go to these amazing places. And actually, I've never been outside Europe. I've never been on a flight that's over 2.5 hours, which is terrifying. When I saw it was a 12-hour flight to Brazil, I'm like, I have no idea what
Is
I'm going
that
to
what it
do with
is? I
them.
haven't actually checked. Right,
Yeah,
okay.
12 hours.
Yeah.
And I realized that there's actually a challenge in that. And I think I'm really seeing the value in that. I'm very glad there are other people actually in the group who, fair play, they've gone like off and traveled already. I'm sort of waiting because someone's organized Brazil, right? We just have to turn up essentially with our wetsuits on or our ties on our heads or whatever it happens to
Remember your
be for
passport as well. That's
oh
useful.
yeah, passport. I actually ordered a load of insect repellent today as well. I thought that was yeah.
Get you.
we're going to it's organized for us, and I think once I've done that step, it will really help me do the independent travel. But yeah, that's kind of weighted towards, obviously the research is really important, but then it's come to me that actually there's this opportunity to meet loads of really cool people. And I've been chatting to people from, like some guy from Canada just rang me out of the blue, and I'm like, this is amazing. This is like, I want to help these people, that's who I am, but also this is like massive benefit to me as well. And that's like super cool.
And I don't think there are many things I could give you advice on in life, Dan, at this point, in fairness. But if I give you any advice, it's the benefit you'll get, forget the PG cert, forget all that stuff from those other cultures is phenomenal. I mean, I hadn't traveled. I'd been to Holland twice and Iceland once by August. And since then, I've been to Tanzania, Rwanda, spent some time in Dubai and Qatar because of that, Ukraine, the States, loads of different places. And forget all of the stuff that I'm there to do, business and whatever wise. People just make everywhere, like you say, and the things you gain is insane. Like, and when you're talking about policy impact on the future of agriculture and that sort of idea. Rwanda will blow your mind if you're going anywhere near there. I mean, genuinely, their president Paul Kagame took over. I can't remember the exact date, but either late 90s or early 2000s, within 8 years post genocide, and everything is regenerative. Forget agriculture, just everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you will not find a piece of litter. You will probably not see corruption. I'm sure it happens, but they've really tried to minimize it. It is tidy. It feels Kigali feels like a small, sandy London.
Mine.
I was taken aback by that country.
And the truth is, like within that, the world's my oyster. And actually, I haven't planned anywhere else in stone. I haven't booked flights. I haven't. And actually, what I'm kind of looking and I hope that Brazil will provide to some degree is some ideas like that of places I should really be going. And to me, that's exciting. And even the fact that you're talking about it kind of passionately. I like that anyway, even if I don't make it there. Like they're the kind of conversations that, and again, coming back to the kind of people that are doing the field, if you think of everyone else in our cohort and the other things I've done, that's one of the best things about it for me. That kind of those discussions and those passions that you see, and I find that very kind of invigorating. And that's when I'm learning at my best, is when I'm kind of in those scenarios.
And I think, having done the academia thing, you learn a bit writing the stuff. But I think this video addition to Nuffield, as much as we're all having a giggle about it, I think we will learn a lot doing that. Because I know on my phone since August, seems to be a very phone-based centric episode, I have the ability to tell dissertations and dissertations of stories purely by, oh, there's that photo when that happened. And I can paint you a picture of that day. And it's if you make that 3 minute video and you B-roll a photo here and there, the story to the person listening to 3 minute video will be the 3 minute video with some nice pictures. The story to the person who sees that video with you, well, the things that you'll be able to put in from those photos have been insane. And like you're saying, you haven't planned places.
No.
I don't think that's an issue at all. I'm in the position where I've booked Holland and Switzerland for the 2 weeks after Brazil, and just basically waiting on a paid invoice to book New Zealand, Japan, and Singapore. But they have not a jot planned.
Okay,
Yeah, I
interesting.
mean, Holland and
And I am
Singapore.
a bit like, yeah, I'm hoping that I can do that at some point. And I've made contact with people and that sort of stuff, but I think you have done it very well from what I can read, but this idea of I kind of want to go and stay with people. I don't want to go and stay in hotels and stuff, and I don't actually know, perhaps because maybe it comes back to that idea of not really asking. But I haven't got to that point where I'm like, oh, can I just come and stay with you? Or can, because actually, the more I stay with people, the further I can go, just in a kind of financial way,
That's it, exactly. And also, like you're saying about even when I was talking there passionately about Rwanda, I think the things you're gonna learn sitting in a hotel room, watching the telly, which probably won't work because you're trying to probably trying
Not in
you're
the hotel room I can afford, no.
probably trying to go budget, aren't you? I mean, let's be serious, you're trying to get the best out of this. So but if you're thinking, you're sitting with someone who, so Holland, for example, I got in touch with one Nuffield scholar. She booked me 3 days of trip, right? Absolutely amazing. And then was like, oh, and I basically said, very rude question, any chance I could have a bed or a floor or whatever? And she was like, oh, I'll get you sorted. And then she mentioned a friend, put me in touch with a friend. She booked me, one of the days fell through, the other 3 days has given me a bed for the full week. Switzerland booked out by another person. And it's purely from giving a quick call to someone. I think
Oh,
David.
well, there you go. If there are any, I really want to go to Canada. So whoever's listening to this that lives in Canada, he'll put me up. I'm here. You hear what I'm into, and that. And actually, I jest it slightly, but that's the kind. I am really seeing the power in just putting myself out there, or other people who are doing it. The ones that are doing really well are just being like, this is me. What can work and what can't work.
I hope you've kicked your feet up and got comfy and enjoying another fantastic episode of the R2 Cast with another really interesting guest. I would just like to quickly take another second to plug the sponsors of the show today, The Scottish Farmer, and I would strongly advise you to go out and pick one up this week and see even more of the fantastic people that are in our industry.
And I think you've just said Canada. Canada is an Nuffield country. Have you been on the Nuffield database, the international database?
I have, and there's a kind of a few names I've written down, and but actually we
Don't
got
write it
sent.
down, just text them.
Well, I know
Just
we
text
got
them.
sent. Did you see we got sent of that everyone's like pen portrait of everyone who's going to Brazil, and there was just some really that stood out, and I went straight on LinkedIn and found them, and it didn't actually. There's a guy in France who just seems like epic. He's like grazing sheep in the Pyrenees. I'm like, I just want to go there because that looks really cool, and I've been to France loads, but you know it's the culture that I really really want to see. And actually, back to your point of Brazil and travel. My mum is born in Chile. She's South American.
Oh, really?
I've never been there. She now lives in Portugal, but she, you know, we've got family in Chile. It's just that it's tough. I've just never A had the financial capacity, or B had the kind of bravery to go. You know, and that's part of it.
And
So
also
this is,
reason, isn't it? Because you've got a wife and kids, and there's that fear of why can I leave for 3 weeks? But now you have a reason, like it's
The
exciting.
happiest, the happiest time of my life is, I kind of had enough of work at some point, and me and my wife, now wife, she wasn't at the time, bought a motorhome and drove around Portugal. Oh, sorry, drove around Europe, bought a Portuguese motorhome and drove all around Europe as far as like Austria and Croatia and Slovenia. And we in pay it was 5 month trip, and we only paid for 6 nights of places to sleep. The rest of the time we just slept in the motorhome wherever. And it was epic, and we were like relaxed, and you know, we were on a tight budget, but who cares in that, you know, in that scenario. And I kind of want, the only downside of the Nuffield is that I can't take my wife with me to a lot of it, because but the advantage of that is that I will develop more, and I'll kind of, you know, I don't have to rely on her for certain things, and she won't rely on me for certain
We
things.
do, by the way, so much.
Absolutely,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Ellie, if you are listening, I've just finished filming with Ollie, who took his wife and two kids to Australia through Nuffield. So,
I don't think she want to come. Someone asked her last night, actually, would she miss me? And she's like, no, not really. He'll come back. That's the kind of attitude on that. I'll be interested to see how much I miss the kids, because I love spending time with my kids. Well, my daughter, my son's an absolute monster, but he's still quite nice. But my daughter especially is kind of daddy's little girl. And but again, I really we do it professionally, but I really see the power in like role modeling. I don't want to see my kids just to see me doing the same thing all the time and kind of being stagnant and pissed off at work or whatever, or upset at work or whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be. That they're only young, but actually, you know, daddy's gone off to go around the world for this cool thing. Well, that's great, you know, and they do learn. What you were saying earlier about the kind of age range about what makes an adult is actually in their very, very young years. And I really believe the kind of the power of role modeling, essentially.
I am, as far as I'm aware, I'm not a father, but the most powerful statement I've ever heard is the only person that remembers you working late all those nights as your kids in 20 years.
Yeah,
And
probably.
it's pretty deep in fairness. Like if you go out and you're, yeah, it's there's so
Yeah,
many.
and you know, there is a lot of truth in that. And yeah, I don't necessarily want to be. I'm not necessarily in that scenario, but I wouldn't want to be either. I think there's a lot more value in life that hopefully I'm going to discover more. But there's a lot more value than that. And yeah, I think it's super exciting. And I kind of the other thing I say to people, you know, getting a Nuffield is it's not all easy. I've been really interested in on the people in the group. The kind of perception is that, you know, it's super exciting to be given one, and then but actually when you start looking at the logistics of it and the kind of effect on people's lives, and it is exciting, but it's not necessarily kind of easy. And I think, you know, that's part of it as well. That kind of, you know, you pushing yourself out of your comfort zone in loads of different ways. And
No, absolutely. Yeah, much like with everyone else in our year, I'm looking forward to following it. Obviously
Well, as I
starting.
say, we'll be currently, for all the people listening, we'll be currently around a pool. And actually, what I was going to say, and I forgot in my previous comment, is it is available to anyone. All the courses that I've done, the OFC thing was bloody brilliant. The Challenger Real Leadership, amazing. Got so many like my friends off that are like friends for life. We had a meet up the other day. People come and stay here, like, and I'd love to do the same in Nuffield, and I'm sure we will. But all those three things that I think have been epic in my life and epic in lots of people's lives, they are available. And I sometimes that's what I was going to say about the kind of the planning of the Nuffield. I've heard loads of this, like, oh, it's really difficult to do and blah blah, I can't do that. Well, you can. You can apply for it. Anyone can apply for it. Anyone can go through the process, and that's kind of the only limiting factor in most of that is oneself. And that's why I think they're really cool, because you don't need to, you don't have to be anything apart from yourself, in my opinion, to achieve these things.
Think if you weren't yourself, you probably wouldn't. These people,
Absolutely, yeah.
many
Yeah,
folk
yeah.
applied for our cohort. Was it 99 or 89?
Some,
89.
yeah, it was quite, I thought it was quite a lot.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite a lot. Not
The
enough that stopped us getting in though, so,
Maybe that was a lie to make us feel better. It's
yeah.
actually 29. And I'd actually put in three applications. No, yeah, it's good. And here, Yaz, if you're listening, I'm currently in Brazil, and please listen to Dan's idea about driving through Europe. I think sounds great.
I'll give you all the tips.
That's it, mate. That's it. And you asked me, you text me, to which I responded today. Let me just read my
Yeah,
response.
you did, yeah.
You said, "What are your two questions that you always ask at the end?" To which I said, "No chance, wink face," because I don't like giving anyone a heads up if they've learned it. Fair play to them, but
Yeah, I mean, the ridiculous thing is that I could have just listened, but I didn't bother because,
it would have taken you about 3 minutes, because they're
yeah,
all
well,
in the last 3 minutes of
yeah.
each one.
Sometimes I struggle with 3 minutes. I've been in a school in Cardiff all day, so yeah, and then you've still got a farm to run, so
Yeah.
yeah.
The three questions are: one, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And two, if you had any advice for people coming into farming, what would they be?
Number one, 5 years. I honestly don't know. That's a really hard question that's actually been brought up quite a lot recently, in a kind of, like personal, professional questioning. And kind of me and Ellie talk about it a lot because we like to chat a lot. As you can tell, I like chatting about things. I kind of see the Nuffield as an opportunity created to some degree. And actually, the stuff that I'm really interested in a lot of the time is the kind of extracurricular stuff. I do see a value in kind of sitting on boards of trustees and kind of getting involved in, I do a lot of mentoring of people that's kind of extra to my work, in the same way I have a mentor and I do some leadership stuff and I love consultancy. We're doing, we actually had a group of people. We have a regenerative equine grazing system here, which I can't really find anywhere else. And actually, Tuesday night, we invited some people to come and look at it and to come and learn and kind of give them a demonstration. And off the back of that, there's a people to come and ask me to consult on what they're doing on their land. And I love all that kind of shared learning and showing, helping people, because I do have skills and I've got transferable skills. And yeah, certainly that kind of peer-to-peer stuff and the mentoring and the environmental stuff. And yeah, I don't actually know. So again, if anyone's got any ideas on that, then hit me up. But we're in a world where those things are changing and accelerating. And actually, I do at the moment see a limiting factor with the fact that I'm not basis registered, for example, and I'm not a qualified land agent from the RAU. But what I'm really, and I've kind of looked at jobs or spoken to people or kind of, and personally, they're the limiting factor for not necessarily going down those roads. But then I really, really talk to people on the other side, including people I mentor, and they're like, but we need people who are thinking differently. We need kind of a change of people to kind of maximize what we're doing. So, and I think that the industry is in a really sort of funny place with that. The other really exciting thing is, I think, is that I spoke to quite a few different organizations about my Nuffield, and there seems to be this real thing at the moment about there is this real recognized need for young people in the industry. And actually, that excites me, because that might produce opportunity, or kind of, if I do a job, I really want to do something that I really love and want to do. And I do think that I've got skills there. And yeah, my head's full of all sorts of things. I love my current job. I think it's amazing. I don't know how you touched on it earlier. I don't know how long sort of sustainable it is. It's quite sort of heavy going, and yeah, I kind of is this looking for that opportunity for something different, perhaps. And I think my mind is open enough that something may or may not happen, or kind of, trying to be relaxed about it. Yeah, the Nuffield network is epic. And actually, as a kind of an other side to that, an interesting stat for your listeners, perhaps, I had, by the time I was 21, I'd lived in 26 different houses. And that is absolutely something that I do not want for my kids. So when you say, where do I see myself in 5 years' time, my kids will be, oh my God, they'll be 9 and 7, which is terrifying. But actually, I want to be somewhere where I'm like, where I feel stable and I feel like I've provided a home for my family. And that's actually one of my biggest sort of day-to-day considerations.
That's a good one. That's a good
Yeah.
one. And by the way, I don't know the answer to 5 years. I
Interesting.
people
Okay.
quite often ask me it, and I'm like, I just want to be going in the right direction. And I don't know what right
You
means.
know, I think that's great. I think that's a great mindset. And actually, I have to check myself sometimes because I think I'm taking life too seriously and I'm worrying about things that I necessarily don't have control over, and that's stressful. And I don't, again, that thing of role modeling to my kids, I don't want to be stressed over that shit. I want them to think that they can do whatever they want to do and be successful at it or not, or do something else. I think we live in a world where we can do that nowadays to some degree.
I do sometimes wonder, I'm like, should I be more stressed about this? Because normal people are. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, should I care more? And I don't ever think it's that I don't care. It's just, well, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but it might be fine.
Well, you're a big time podcaster, so you'll be all right. You can do that from anywhere,
I'm a
you
podcaster.
know. Everyone always asks you this. You need to ask these questions separately. What's the second question? What advice to anyone going into the industry? Put yourself out there. As I just said, all of these things that I'm doing, I never did. But I now really believe in the power of kind of like self-development. We call it CPD, but this kind of I've done quite a lot of reading on this because it's a subject that comes up at work quite a lot and other people's work. I've got a really good mate who's been made a director of somewhere, and we kind of get thrown into these things that we don't necessarily always understand. And I've done a lot of reading about how businesses function. And I do it with farming stuff. Certainly when I'm speaking to people, I kind of have these light bulb moments when I'm like, that makes perfect sense. And there was an analogy about how really successful businesses see themselves as sports teams rather than as families or as businesses or operations. They view themselves as a sports team, where basically, if you think of a sports team, you train and train and train so when the moment comes, you're kind of performing at your optimum. And when you don't perform at your optimum, you reflect on why that may have happened. And you obviously can't, the weight of training and working can't be as much as in a sports team necessarily. But if those people in a sports team never bothered to train and just thought that they were good enough, or thought that they're operating as a kind of some sort of system whereby, oh, it's okay because we're all one big family that that guy's not performing, then I see that as an issue. Does that make sense? So what I'm saying is that is development for me is just that trying to be better. And I think in the farming industry, we settled for the kind of, it's always been done like this and therefore it must be okay, or we settle for the kind of this is providing this and that's all we need. And I just don't view it as that anymore. I think you don't have to kind of necessarily flog your guts out in the gym, for example, but the idea of just trying to be better and trying to kind of operate as a team better and analyze performance better, i.e., in a farming scenario, budgets, KPIs, I'm just not sure how you can run a business without them. And I guess the reason I'm saying that in this scenario is if you're a new entrant coming into it, like setting yourself some kind of training targets and some kind of clear goals, clear pet KPIs is one of the other places that I would start. I think you have to write that into your kind of mindset.
That's interesting. Because
The other thing is, and sorry to interrupt, just the
okay.
last thing on that, because I recognize I'm terrible at it, ask for help. The learning that I have done and the kind of all peer-to-peer learning and stuff, it's invaluable, and you only get it if you're prepared to kind of ask. And what's the point in buggering about not making any money if you're looking over the hedge and someone's doing something that you're really interested in? Like, speak to them about it in a very simplistic view. And what I really believe in that is, and you'll see this all the time, if people get asked for help, they're generally prepared to give it. It's
Yeah,
just that very often they
100%.
don't get asked, you know.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. Yeah.
They
No.
were probably very long answers for those questions, but and probably not that necessarily clear, but I liked people to come to their own conclusions rather than be
Like that.
given conclusions.
I like that. I don't have the ability to give people conclusions. Which you should maybe work on in fairness for the PG cert, but apart from that, it'll be grand. Yeah, Dan, it genuinely has been a pleasure, mate, bringing you on. It's been great
Yeah,
fun.
love it.
Yeah, it's been good fun. And I think there is one more left to film with, I think I'm right in saying, in our cohort.
Is there?
That's us.
Okay.
That's us.
Okay. Well, until we do, till we do you.
Well, I'm technically been done, but we
Are
can do
you done? You know you did do yourself,
it.
didn't you, at Christmas?
We can do
Yeah.
it again. We can do it again. No, I think that would be quite fun. Appreciate you having you on. Appreciate your time as well. Hope you've enjoyed it yourself.
Yeah, no, I enjoy it. I'm just aware that we probably didn't talk very much about what your listeners were perhaps expecting, or
Nah,
I
here
don't
the, I,
know. Yeah.
the Jamie's Farm site is very interesting. It's a new thing for a lot of people, and yeah, so I'm sure the listeners have enjoyed hugely. I certainly did. I got very engrossed in it, to be honest. If you are one of those
You know,
listeners.
when we go to Brazil, sorry, when we go to Brazil, I'm just going to take your phone off you. That's basically the only thing I've learned.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, for sure. I'll have 17 burners. Now, if you are one of those listeners, that's been Dan Smith, who I believe, I think off the top of my head, the second last of our Nuffield cohort, apart from myself. Last episode we had Louisa Hendry speaking all things rocks and geology and all that stuff. I believe there's some jokes to get from the Big Bang Theory about geology, but that's all I've got. If I don't find them there, I've got no chance. And then Mr. Flavian Obiero coming up next, talking all things how well he's smashing life. And I believe, actually, Dan, he's one of the OFC Inspire this year.
He was previously, and also another ridiculous connection. He's one of our trustees as well. I think Flav's a
Isn't
great guy. He's
great guy.
brilliant, and it'll be a really good listen for anyone actually, because he's doing some really cool stuff.
If anyone wants to go hear his story before the update comes out, go back and check what is something I could tell you. I'm going to tell you a random fact to try and kill the time when I look for the episode he was on. Do you know that if a goose wants to fly, no matter how far they're going to try to make sure to only fly over land, only jumping over short periods of water when and if they have to? There's a little random fact for you as I Google, and I focused way too much on actually seeing that without even looking. R2Cast number 4, Flavian Obiero on the UK pig industry and discrimination in farming is the title. Very good episode there. Look that one up. And just before the update, thank you all for listening, and we shall see you for episode number 186. See you then.
I hope you've enjoyed another excellent episode of the R2 Cast as much as I have, and I would just like to quickly thank our primary sponsors of the show today, Howden Rural, the new name for A-Plan Rural. If you follow Howden Rural on social media, you'll see the plethora of work that they do to support this sector, and it's been a pleasure to work alongside them so far, and long may it continue. For more information about them, be sure to check out howdeninsurance.co.uk/rural, and I'll see you for the next episode.